Do you want to hear my radio voice?
Yeah, let's see it.
It's Jackie. Welcome back to the Clovis Culture Podcast. On a scale of 9 to 10, how much did you love that?
On a scale of 9 to 10? I'll go with a 10. I'll give you a 10. Yeah.
Nice. Nailed it.
What's up, everybody?
It's Justin.
Oh, I got a good thing somewhere.
Clovis. Building a healthy life together.
Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of the Clovis Culture Podcast. I'm Jackie, and today Justin and I are tackling what we believe to be the cornerstone to better health, better relationships, and even better financial success. The key is universal self-love. Now, we know that we have a bunch of devout science nerds, biohacking badasses, and entrepreneurial souls in our audience, and an episode about self-love might not seem as useful or information-dense as, let's say, an episode breaking down our best fitness hacks, or teaching you how to debunk junk science in the media, or what new supplements we're excited about, all of which are future episodes, by the way. But Justin and I break down why this particular step can seem so elusive for so many of us, as well as why it's so paramount to success. If you missed your therapy session this week, don't worry, we've got you covered, because you'll hear Justin get incredibly vulnerable about some of his biggest revelations on his journey. You'll hear me talk about my biggest struggles with self-love that I still struggle with today. And you'll leave with a handful of exercises and practices that will absolutely change your life if you apply them daily. Be sure to take notes, or if you're driving, listen to this episode more than once. I can honestly say that this is my favorite podcast episode we've produced in the past 4 years, and I'm hoping that you'll love it as much as I do. If you'd like to learn more from Justin, you can check out his signature course, the Clovis Custom Metabolism Reset. It's linked in the show notes, and I have to say it's my favorite educational program he's ever made, and I say that as someone who has had to sift through all of his hours and hours of content as part of my job. And lastly, if you'd like to make a suggestion for a topic you want us to dig into on a future episode, we'd love to hear from you at support@imclovis.com. Okay, so with no further ado, we hope you love this episode. Today, I want to have a conversation with you about self-love, which might seem a little left to center for a health and wellness podcast, but as you and I mentioned in our previous episode, self-love, self-awareness, self-care in a lot of ways is the foundation for accomplishing literally anything else. This is something that I've struggled with. All of my clients struggle with it too, and I know that it has been an immense part of your journey personally. We joke, you and I, and you've been open about this with our audience too, is that we get you in with health and wellness and physique and biohacking, and then the next thing you know, you're like crying in the fetal position by yourself. Mm-hmm. The more that we can kind of chip away at the self-love piece of everything, I think the better that we do overall. But one of the things that I really want to start with is, what the fuck is self-love? It seems like something that we are being sold online by influencers a lot. And I think that there's weird convolution between self-care and self-love. Like, love yourself, go take a bath. Like, love yourself, eat the cake. Love yourself, go drink half a bottle of wine. That last one's not only bad self-love, it's bad self-care. So how can we tell the difference between all the different things that we're being told is self-love, and how do we know if we're tapping into the right thing?
Yeah, there's a way that I word this with my personal clients that seems to be helpful for me, and that is, how you do something is how you do everything. And the best example that I can give of this in popular kind of podcasting world is, one of the best-selling authors right now is a guy named David Goggins. David Goggins has these books like You Can't Hurt Me and all this stuff, and he runs 200 miles a day, and he runs and trains even when his meniscus is torn and all this stuff, and like, you just have to get up and do it. You have to go. Be hard and all this stuff. And I find that a lot of people mistake that kind of really, really strong self-confidence with self-love. And there are people that will only love themselves if they put the running shoes on and go put in the work. And what I'm trying to help people see is that if you can't love yourself when you look at the shoes and go, not today, I'm crawling back into bed. If you can't love that version of yourself as well, then you don't really love yourself. And the reason why I like that you bring up baths, you and I have talked about this in the past personally, where you're like, baths aren't really my thing. And I'm like, the bath is a placeholder for when you have an option to go do these coping mechanism things, that's an avoidance pattern. It's just trying to do more, 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 because as long as they're doing more, learning more, consuming more input, getting facts, and they always tell me, I want to learn more science, I want to learn more science. They're trying to feel good about themselves through doing more, because it prevents them from having the moments that I have with my clients where I'm like, can you stand in front of a mirror naked, look at yourself and say, I love you 10 times and mean it. And for most clients, it becomes, can you look in the mirror naked and say, I love you 10 times without bursting into tears? And for many people, the answer is no to that question. And that is where private coaching with me begins. Everybody gets mirror work. Everybody gets a Food and You journal prompt, which is let's go back through your childhood and make you uncover when was the first time you heard your mom talk about calories? When was the first time you heard your mom complain because she couldn't fit into these jeans? Did your mom weigh herself every morning? Did your dad make inappropriate comments about your weight when you were 13 years old? We tease apart all this stuff. I say things so matter-of-factly, and I always mean them from love, but sometimes it doesn't sound that way. And this is one of those moments where I'll say, I have never had someone come to me who is struggling with their weight, who is struggling with their health, has significant issues in the health and wellness space, who is also happy with their lives and really loves themselves. It's never happened, not one time.
And that can translate into other things. You can apply that to physique. You can also apply that to financial situation. You can apply that to relationship status. So it's not just, I haven't met anyone who feels very in alignment, who is struggling with their aesthetic goals, their physique, their health in some way, but maybe they're killing it financially, but their relationships are a mess. Mm-hmm. I think it's multifaceted, and I think that helps frame it as not purely being about people's bodies or indicative of how people feel about themselves. One of the things that you said that I really love is confusing confidence with self-love. And I think that's so brilliant. That's something that I've struggled with too, is that, you know, it'll be so much easier for me to love myself once I lose 30 pounds. It'll be so much easier for me to feel good about myself once I'm in a different financial situation, mm-hmm. to avoid actually having to face the fact that, like, if my body doesn't change a pound for the rest of my life, am I okay with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And oddly enough, so one, I'll just start by saying that anytime I'm talking about someone struggling with their health, I'm actually almost never talking about body weight. Body weight is part of it. You know, we've talked about this a lot where I'm just like, if I can get you healthy, body fat loss, like excess body fat loss, is just a result of you getting healthy. It's a consequence of you getting healthy. So I always look at it through the lens of health first.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing you said about, like, can you be happy with yourself if you never lose another pound? Oddly enough, we get into this chicken and egg scenario. And every single client I've ever had is convinced that they're going to need to change a lot of things. And then at some point down the line, they will be a healthy person. And it actually happens the opposite. And I have to give them this sort of psychedelic twilight zone moment of where I'm like, becoming a healthy person is a light switch decision. It is the same thing as you turning off a light switch or turning on a light switch. And it happens that quickly. You are making the decision from now on, I am a healthy person, which means I live as a healthy person, and every decision I make is the decision of a healthy person. When you make that decision, you become a healthy person, and on a quantum mechanics level, the only thing that can happen from that point forward is your body is forced to express itself as a healthy person. And then all of a sudden, it's 3 months later, and you've lost 40 pounds, and you have more energy, and you're feeling amazing, and your cognitive function's better, all this stuff. Whatever those results may be, they come as a result of you becoming a healthy person. You're not a healthy person once you've lost 40 pounds. You become a healthy person now, live that way, and then you manifest those results through that intention of I am now a healthy person.
Yeah, that's a great point. Why do you think it feels like a heavier switch than that? You know, you describe it like a light switch, but is it fear? Is it narratives that we've got mm-hmm. going on? Why do you think it feels like it can't be that simple?
Unfortunately for most people, they have built a life that they are not happy with.
Mm-hmm.
That is the core of what we get down to. I've actually had a problem with Clovis because people will come to me for weight loss and then they work with me for some period of time and then they'll make me a video testimony about like how their life has changed.
Yeah.
And their video testimony is like, Justin completely transformed my life. I have a different relationship with my family and my kids, and I moved to a different state, and I started my own business, and I have so much confidence above. And they don't even mention the weight they lost. And you're like, oh.
Oh, yeah. The number of teary Jackie testimonies about my children and my friendships. There's several in the archives of just me losing my shit with testimonies for Clovis.
Exactly. And that's where we land. We're in a situation where your ideal version of yourself, your happiest, most fulfilled, most content, most joyful life is here. And where you are right now is over here. Mm-hmm. So you are fundamentally out of alignment. The faster you're in alignment with who you really want to be, the easier everything becomes. I used to give this analogy early on in Clovis where I was saying, if we have somebody who is, you know, they want to change their life, but the very best moment of their day is when they get through the drive-thru at Wendy's and they eat that first bite of a chocolate Frosty. If that is the best part of their day, I literally cannot compete with that. Because if it's like the best dopamine hit or whatever they're getting during the day, and everything else is just, it's drudgery. It's like, oh, I got out of bed. It was cold outside because I live in a place that I don't really want to live at, but there's this job for me here and my parents grew up here, so here I am. And then I waited in traffic for an hour and then I got to my job and I did this kind of cubicle thing, whatever it is. I don't know what the job is. I'm not judging anyone's job. But if you don't love your job, you got to think about what that's doing to you. You have 40 hours a week where you're like doing something that you hate. And then, you know, let's say you do live in a cold climate. Let's just continue this analogy, right? And then that person's driving home. Well, now it's dark out because it's January in Michigan and it's 4:30 and it's dark outside and you weren't in the sun for a moment of your day. And then you pull into the drive-thru at Wendy's and you have a Frosty and then you get home and like maybe the house is messy or maybe you have a partner, maybe you don't. Maybe your partner came home from work in a bad mood and then the kids have homework and blah, 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 all the different things. And you end up in this situation where, you know, a lot of people will come to me on day one and they're like, I don't really know, you know, what's going on. I don't really know what made me call you. They can't identify what is wrong. That's the thing. They can't identify the out of alignment. Yeah. So my job as a coach is to ask as many probing questions as I can and get to know that person as well as I can and to go back in time with them and then go forward and look at their feet. What do you want for yourself? And it usually takes me a session or two to tease apart that they're just living a life that's completely out of alignment with what they wanted. And they do this kind of thing where like they have sunk cost theory, where if they're like 42 and they're living in a life they don't like, they're like, well, you know, it's over for me. I had all these dreams when I was 18 and I haven't done any of them. And I really wanted to go to Europe and backpack and I never did that. And I had kids too young and I did this, I did that. And I have to just pause them and be like, you're 42, you're a baby. We have so much time to do all of these things and course correct. And there's just people really have this like, what have I done? Once they realize that they're living out of alignment with their ideal life, it starts to become a kind of sky is falling mentality, and my job is to coach them out of that.
I love that. And I think that's where we kind of get into a misunderstanding with the concept of emotional eating as well, is that, you know, the biggest argument that we get is like, well, food is joy. Food is joy. And I would argue that the experience of eating can be social, it can be familial, it can be the people that you're eating with can bring you joy. I think food is really only capable of bringing you pleasure, but when we keep calling it joy to ourselves again and again and again and again, we're hardwiring that connection between joy and food. And pleasure is innately not good or bad. It's completely neutral. It's just a thing, right? Mm-hmm. But you can find it someplace else other than the drive-through. There's a biochemical aspect of it too, right? We talked about last episode where sugar really helps with the symptoms that you're feeling in the moment of depression or anxiety. So mm-hmm. There's a biological element of it too. Mm-hmm. And this is not to shame anybody for that decision, like been there, done that. But there's different ways to get the pleasure if that's what you're seeking. And there's about a million other ways to find joy if that's actually what you want. That has nothing to do with food. But we as a culture really like that narrative of food is joy and cooking for people that you love is love, right? Feeding people that you love something that is going to hurt them is not. It just, there's just kind of no other way around it.
Oh, 100. I couldn't agree with that line more. I mean, that's amazing. Yeah.
It's just not. Yeah. And that's okay. Like it's a reframing. It's a know better, do better situation, you know? And I don't think we need to hold on to the way that we've done things in the past as a way to validate what we're doing currently and validate what we're doing in the future. And the other thing that you said that I found so poignant was people are 42 and think that they've fucked everything up, essentially. And that's just such make-believe, and it really is just kind of the statement of the traditional way of doing things. Yeah. Like, did you wait until you were like 27.5 to get married? Did you have kids at 29 3/4? Yeah. And did you have just two of them? Do you have one boy and one girl? Do you have a partner that has a good job? You know, it's, did I tick all of the boxes that everybody told me would A, not get me ostracized from the group, and B, were supposed to guarantee me safety and happiness? And the biggest fucking ruse is that that's just not a thing. You taught me that. You're the biggest paradigm bender human that has ever existed in my entire life. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. I've been very excited for Jackie's future for a very long time, and I still am. But it's interesting, you know, when I go to this concept of how you do something is how you do everything, the two things you just talked about, we're going to tie them together in a nice, neat little bow, and people will see how this happens, right? So it becomes this like, oh yeah, food is love. I like to make food for the people in my life. And I like, we eat meals together, and food is joy, and food is this. Listen, we don't live in your grandma's food environment. We have been duped. We have been poisoned. So again, like you said, we don't have to do things the way we used to do them. Now, if we could actually go back in time to 1850 or whatever, when your great-great-great-great-grandmother was like making dinner for her family, and it was full of love, and it was like only real, rich, nutrient-dense ingredients in whole foods because Pop-Tarts didn't exist and the Wendy's Frosty did not exist. If we're going to go back in time and say, well, getting together around the table as a family is a tradition and we need to be doing this, then yeah, I think we need to do more of that, but we also need to choose the ingredients that used to be fed to us in those times, what our ancestors ate. So if we can ditch the processed junk food environment, and most people, like, you know, you have Italian families sitting down for dinner and they're like, we've been eating like this for generations. I'm like, everything that you cooked came in a box today. Yes, it's pasta and red sauce, but all of it came in a box. So we have that. That's the modern food system is a problem there. And then the same thing, I've talked to you about this because you have kids and the age you had kids and all that stuff. I have these people that just think they're like trapped in this cell of their own making where they're just like, well, you know, the kids have school and we have jobs and we have this and we have that. And before I go any further with this, I know that that a lot of people cannot do what I'm about to say. But it is an example of understanding that you can really do whatever you want. We live in a world where Megan and I know a lot of entrepreneurs. We have entrepreneurial friends. But we also have really close friends that both work 9-to-5 jobs and literally spent the entire month of August living in Mexico with a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. They took their kids with them and they lived in a foreign country for an entire month and had these amazing experiences and all this stuff. There are a lot of things that you can do. I think a lot of people really think that doing cool things is maybe more expensive than it is or requires more logistics, like with schooling or whatever, because mm-hmm. those kids are in school the rest of the year. There's a million ways to do these things. There are these stories that people have that, like, because my life currently looks like X, I can never do Y. And that's just a false belief. So everything has to change. Our paradigms have to shift.
And even if we're not talking like travel and parenting per se, but even if your thing is maybe like, you know what, I'm really, really into jiu-jitsu. I want to give this a shot, but like, yeah, I'm 40. Yeah. This is that stupid. My significant other, we don't have the money for this. Like, even just enough of a paradigm shift of like, you can be a 40-year-old accountant who decides to be a jiu-jitsu badass and takes a 2-hour lunch break because you've negotiated that with your employer so that you can go train, have time to eat and recover, get back to work. And not only will that just make your soul happy, you'll probably be more fucking productive too. So it's not just like, you know, the beautiful things that we see on Instagram. It can also be something that is just outside of what you think that you're supposed to do in such a small way that would bring you so much joy. And I think one of the threads that we're pulling here, we're getting there slow and steady, is that that's a way of showing yourself. Self-love is allowing yourself the seemingly luxury, even though it's really not, of allowing the paradigm shift mm-hmm. and not falling into the boxes that everybody says that you're supposed to.
100%. Yeah. It was even true of me, even though I had a cool job. I was the guy on stage for so many years, right? Like mm-hmm. that was cool to some degree, but I wasn't like traveling around the world or anything like that like I do now, because I had set up a life for myself in which I had to do specific things and be on stage at specific times. So something that I do with people, especially if they're in that situation where they're in their 40s and kind of trying to figure out life, I ask them what they like to do, and most people don't know. They really can't. I'm like, what do you actually like to do? And we go through their whole week, and I'm like, how many of those things like really light you up, like that you really like to do? And they're like, I mean, 100% of my day is spent doing things that I either need to do that are obligatory, or I feel like I need to do, which is another thing, things I don't really need to do, but I feel like I need to, so I do them. And people are living their entire existence in an obligatory way. So I'm like, okay, like, what do you like to do? And if they don't know what they like to do, then I assign them unique experiences and I expect them to do it. And I'll give you a range of things that people have tried, right? I have had people...
Yes, please. Examples. Yes, please.
I have literally had people go in the wintertime into the woods and jump in a creek. Had people do that. I've had people go get a four-hands massage. One person that was particularly struggling with, like, affection and having kind of a hard time with, like, human touch and connection said, go get a four-hands massage, which is where two talented massage therapists work on you at the same time. So they can do like kind of pressure points, insertion points and all this thing. It's literally four hands on you at one time for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And I usually have people negotiate with their partners. If they have kids and they have a partner, it's like, listen, one evening per month, you're going to go have a unique experience. And it may be that you sign up for a somatic breathwork session, seminar somewhere, or you go take a heated yoga class, or you find a salt cave and go get a, you know, reflexology foot massage laying in a salt cave, or you go take a guitar lesson, or you go to a jiu-jitsu class, or a four-hands massage, or you go for free, go take your clothes off and jump in a river like a quote-unquote crazy person and just have an experience you've never had before. I have one friend, he's a very talented shaman out in Norway, and he works with like really high net worth individuals as a life coach. And he's like, dude, sometimes these people are so structured and they have so many responsibilities that the first thing I do with them is I have them brush their teeth with their non-dominant hand because that's the only thing they have time for. And I need to make their brain start to think differently to get out of this patterned existence. I mean, people have really created prison cells for themselves. So this term unique experiences, you know, clients that take off and go to Peru and do a full-blown ayahuasca retreat and have plant medicines and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, and everything in between.
Yes.
People that have started jiu-jitsu. One client I was just working with, she and her friend absolutely loved every Christmas. They would make lip balms and bath bombs and all these really amazing things for their friends and family. They'd give them away as gifts. And then all throughout the year, their friends and family would be like, I ran out of lip balm. Like, can I buy some lip balm from you?
Yeah.
So these girls, I mean, I've worked with her for 90 days and we had a lot of conversations about joy and fulfillment and contentment. What do you like doing? Oh, sounds like you like working with this friend over here, XYZ. And before you know it, like they just did their first month of launching it as an actual business.
Yay.
And they did like $3,000 in revenue and 2,000 of it was pure profit.
Oh,
and they're
wonderful.
Like spending time together and enjoying what they're doing. It's like, it's things like this. I mean, it's just story after story after story. And I think I love that you had this podcast was your idea, this episode and everything. And I love it because I don't think people get to see behind the scenes because I'm such a health and wellness guy in all of the content. It's always about metabolism, weight loss, body fat, increasing your metabolic rate and all these things. And I'm like, guys, you know, I say it in podcasts if people get into our content, we're like, I don't think health and wellness is a goal. I think it's just needs to be removed as an obstacle. It's like, that's where you start to go live the rest of your life. So, I mean, there's just example after example of people like now living their best lives, just working through these things and figuring out what they want to do. Like, why do you even want to be healthy?
Yeah.
Why do you want to be 40 pounds lighter? What will you do differently when you're 40 pounds lighter? Let's talk about it. If you don't even know what you enjoy in life, then that's not a lot of motivation to stop eating the Frosty.
Right. I see this with a lot of moms when it's like, what do you like to do? And they're like, I don't know anything about myself anymore because it's such a pivotal experience as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even like this advice necessarily of what did you used to like to do? Because you're a totally different person now. Why go back there? You know what I mean? That's like saying, I used to like to put glue on my hands and peel it off when I was in kindergarten. I don't think that's a good hobby for me now.
Yeah.
So let's move forward. And it can be something so small. Like, have you been curious about knitting?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be the big grand thing. I just want to provide like an other side of the coin for listeners as well, where it's like, you can just learn how to knit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, or you, if you're really into a type of show that you're watching online or something, maybe there's some ASL in it, like American Sign Language, or maybe there's some sort of native culture that's intertwined into the narrative. And you're like, that seems like it might be cool. Just to follow your curiosities is a way of, A, just expanding your brain in a way that is only going to be good things, even if you knit together half of a Norwal and decide you freaking hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it also allows you to show yourself that you, as a human being, believe that your ideas are good and you trust yourself to follow your own ideas and nothing horrible happens. And to me, I think personally, that's been the hardest part of self-love, is because I also struggle a lot with self-trust. Mm. It can be really hard to understand that your tiny voices, your little inklings are something that not only can and probably should be followed, but even if it ends up horribly, quote unquote, the rewards that you reap from even trying are just brilliant. I would love it if you could talk a little bit about some of the ways in which you've figured out how to love yourself, some of the things that you've done, maybe where the ripples were unsuspecting. You realized, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. like, I'm a cool guy. I've got it going on. I like being with
you. Yeah. I mean, I have to be careful with these conversations because I cry easily these days. But I actually really like the example you gave of jiu-jitsu.
We love a man who knows what he feels.
Oh, I cry all the time. I love it. It's the best. but I like the example of jiu-jitsu for one. I'll get into my expression of where my happiness came from and when I started to tease this apart and like share my own story of that. But the reason why jiu-jitsu is such an apt example, and I like that you keep saying jiu-jitsu, is that jiu-jitsu is very scary. Yeah. Jiu-jitsu is physical. It is scary. There's a social aspect to it. You got to go somewhere and meet strangers. Like, this is big time growth, unique experience, right? Because mm-hmm. if the things that you're doing for unique experience, so I use unique experience as like a noun because it's like I use it so much in coaching. But if the unique experience you're going to have involves an educational piece to it, like learning to play the piano or like, you know, doing jiu-jitsu or something like that, like eventually playing piano, you have to play piano in front of your instructor. That's scary. Like, it's really helping people see that if you want to have the best freaking life ever, just listen to your fear and then go mm-hmm. conquer that fear. If something scares the holy shit out of you and it's not really life-threatening, like, go do it. You know, like, have the experience. And this goes for everything small. Like, if there's a conversation you've been wanting to have with your significant other for 6 months and you're afraid to have it, that it needs to be the next conversation you have. There cannot be another conversation before that scary conversation. That's the Absolutely. One that has to happen. Mm-hmm. So your fear is literally a compass pointing you true north to your best life. That's what it is. And I'll give you an example of this, right? I was a professional musician for 15 years. For the newbies listening here in Clovis, I was playing something like 300 shows a year, played shows all around the country. I did reality TV. I was on freaking ABC with a network TV show by the time I was 25. Like, I did the thing, you know? And that wasn't scary to me by the end. It was, I mean, all through my career, I was scared shitless. The first time I got on stage in Nashville, I thought I was going to die. My face was red like a tomato. I was terrified. And then after the music career, I will never forget this one big moment of personal growth that I had. I was at Red Rocks, an amphitheater in Colorado with Megan. And we were listening to Grizz, who's like my favorite DJ of all time. And Megan, ugh. I will literally cry telling the story. So I started hanging out with Megan and like dating Megan when I was 34, I want to say 34, 35, 34, I think. And, it was like the third time I'd been to her house and she started talking about how much she loves to dance. And I was like, oh, I don't dance. I don't, you know, on stage as a performer my whole life. I don't dance. And she was like, what? And this was like I did not know that this was like a no-fly zone for Megan. She's like, we are not going to pretend you don't know how to dance. She's like, put your glass down. We were like drinking a glass of wine or something. She's like, put your glass down. And like literally she put on a waltz and she's like, we're starting with a waltz and we're dancing in my kitchen right now. Get over it. And I was like, whoa. All right. Yes, like ma'am. She taught me to dance. And we did like this pretty little waltz. And then she taught me like salsa dance. And then I ended up taking a hip-hop dance class because I worked one-on-one with an instructor because, like, I just wanted to be able to dance with this amazing human that I just now have a romantic relationship with. So I, like, went and worked with this instructor one-on-one. And, like, as he put it, we unfroze my hips that were frozen and I, like, learned dance. And I had this tremendous shame wall around dancing. And I realized, oh, I can go back over my patterns. Like, my piano was a safety net for me. If I just sit here and play these keys well and sing, then everyone thinks I'm awesome and yeah. girls think I'm sexy and all these things. And like, I don't have to get up and be Bruno Mars because I have this instrument here, you know? Yeah. And I realized that I had a tremendous shame wall. And again, this is what we do in my private coaching. I went all the way back. My dad and all his brothers are French Canadian hockey players and all got in all the fist fights when they were kids. So then I grew up getting in all the fist fights and anything that moved your hips was, you know, the non-politically correct term of like, oh, that's gay. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had so much shame and tough guy and toxic masculinity And I don't even like the term toxic masculinity. It is real. I think most of the time that people are using it, it's just like, they're not quite using it correctly.
Yeah, gaslighting
exist.
The same as a term.
Exactly. Gaslighting gets used incorrectly all the time. But anyway, so there is such a thing as toxic masculinity. And that was like, I literally was afraid to move my hips in public so other men would not call me a homosexual. Yeah. Like, that's toxic masculinity, you know? Yeah, I had this moment months later at Red Rocks dancing to Grizz, who Megan introduced me to Grizz, and he's like my favorite DJ of all time. Now I love his music. And we're dancing to Grizz, and I was literally dancing and crying. And I was like, this is church. Like, I'm at church right now. Like, what is happening? And like, I love the music that's happening. I love the way that I'm moving my body. I have the freedom now to move my body in a way that, like, I'm actually not worrying about if I'm a good dancer. I'm expressing myself through my body, which I later learned was like somatic release work. I didn't even know what somatic release work was, but I was doing it. And the reason this particular story is hard for me is we were walking out at the end of the concert, and I just looked at Megan and I was like, I've been on the wrong side of the damn stage my whole life. It was everybody else that told me to get on that stage. Everybody else. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was a kid, doing the thing that I loved to do, which was music, got me a lot of attention and it got me a lot of love from grown-ups. And when you are a child, love means survival. No love equals death. You are dependent on grown-ups for food, for shelter, for water, for love, for affection, for safety, everything. So this is where we get into the deep interpersonal depth psychology of like the ego versus the shadow and the new age Instagrams love to use the term shadow incorrectly, and it drives me insane. It's my least favorite thing about new age spirituality. But ultimately, the things that get you more love end up in your ego. And the things that take away love end up in your shadow. These are the different aspects of yourself that you either put on display, ego, or you hide, shadow. For me, being very, very talented was very, very egoic and got me a lot of love. So the next thing I know, and like if I'm honest about it now, like I never enjoyed music the way that I should have to pursue it as much as I did. And the closer I got to fame, the TV show and all these things, the more I hated it. I was like, I can't do this. I stayed in the industry for 5 years too long, for sure. And this is just, you know, this is my story, but I hope this is resonating with people and helping them tease apart. We do things because we think we should and because other people told us to. And we don't necessarily know if that's the thing that we wanted to do. Like Justin, little boy Justin, got all the social cookies and all the love for being a performer. So he was like, well, shit, if I can just do this and people pay me money for it, like, that's cool. But I ended up in a prison cell of my own making. 300 shows a year. I couldn't travel. Every holiday I'm on stage. Like I'd never celebrated a New Year's Eve with my family. That had never happened before because I was on stage for everyone since I was 16. You know? So it's like, I mean, I guess I should say as an adult, I didn't celebrate with them. But it just was this crazy thing where I'm like, I mean, this is just, I used to call it golden handcuffs. You know, like I make money doing it. Everybody tells me my job is amazing and everyone tell me I should be so happy. And then I'm like, well, why am I getting drunk 6 nights a week while doing this? This seems strange. Like, do I really love this thing I'm doing? You know? And anyway, so that was just like a big moment for me of like learning to dance was a terrifying thing. I had a huge shame wall around it. And then once I started doing it publicly and expressing myself in that way and experiencing music in a way that I had never experienced music, I was never letting the music move me, as they say. And then I had this experience and it just unraveled so much in my mind. And this is where we talk about integration. It's like, it's one thing for me to be like, well, that was weird. I was dancing and I started to cry. Well, me, I gotta go home and journal and meditate and figure out what was that? What did I just release? What just came out of my body? And that's just one example, you know?
I know, I love you. Thank you so much for sharing that story, by the way. I appreciate
that.
Yeah,
you got it.
It's such an easy parallel to, if you change specialness out for societal standards, right? If you work the 9-to-5, if you're the doctor, if you're the lawyer, if you are management, if you have the job that looks great on the name tag, if you don't call out, you know, things that you see that you don't like in your environment or in your world or in your community, in your family, then you get to be safe and you don't have to be special because you're safe. And I think that all of us have this thing in us where we want no one to look at us, but we also want to be the most special human in the room all of the time so that we can be safe and we can be loved. And there's no real way to be both of those things at once.
Yeah.
Which is why we say things like, you know, we prefer the devil we know rather than the devil we don't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, misery loves company. We are very comfortable with keeping the homeostasis of things while also being miserable. While there's this thing inside of us that's just like, I'm not okay. Mm-hmm. Something's not right. What do I do? And that's how people end up seeking out yourself, you and me. Mm-hmm. It's because they know that there's something that is not quite right, but they can't figure it out. I know people listening hopefully are going to get really fired up by this conversation. They're going to be like, all right, I'm going to figure out how to like do the thing that I like. And it's just a couple of ounces of bravery to be curious will get you so much further than you think that it will. You don't need to like jump out of a plane. You don't need to, you know, break up with your husband of 14 years tomorrow. You don't need to, you know, there's so many things that you do not need to do. Just having the bravery to be curious about why you're doing the things that you're doing, what you're doing, and how there is possibility of something else for literally everyone, literally every single human. I have not met a human that does not have the possibility of turning their shit around step by step.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And something important to note here is like one of the quick things that happens is like the judgment. If somebody hears a story like mine and they're like, oh, well, Justin's been talented since he was 8, right? Like this kind of thing. It's very easy to write that off. But I also want people to see that where we get ego and shadow confused in today's society is that people look at the shadow as this like dark thing. It's like the dark parts of ourselves, like our anger or resentment or whatever. No, that's not true. The shadow is just the thing that took love away from you as a child. So for every Justin that is out there who played the piano and sang and his parents were like, this is amazing, clap, hooray. There's a million other kids who played the piano and sang and their dad slapped them in the face and was like, your mom's trying to take a nap. Shut up. Don't touch the piano. That's not for you. And it's hard for people to understand that ego can also be underperforming or lack of ambition or lack of dreaming or lack of charisma or extrovertedness, right? Like there are a lot of people, if you're like the person that's like the perpetual wallflower and afraid to do things and constantly working jobs that are below their skill level or whatever, then that is your ego. Your ego is being an underperformer, and you have to get to why that is. You know, now if you're genuinely happy doing those things, it's totally cool. There is no difference between being an astronaut and being whatever 9-to-5 minimum wage job. It doesn't matter. If you're fulfilled doing the thing, it is perfect for you. It's fucking great. Don't let anybody tell you you have to be an online entrepreneur or some shit. Right. But what I want people to see, a lot of the patterns that they have, if they're sitting here like, well, yeah, it's easy for Justin to say because Justin's an online personality and he was a musician and he's talented and all that. It's like trying to understand that, like, well, the things that I am, I'm a mirror. Right. People are attracted to me online because I'm a mirror. So if you see something in me, whether it's charisma or muscles or a radio voice, whatever the hell you think it is that I have. The only reason you're attracted to it is because you have it inside of you and you want to express it. This is called shadow consumption. The parts of me that are expressing themselves in my ego are in your shadow. So this is why I get people all the time, especially women that come to me that have never really like stood up for themselves or have never really been like aggressive or like put their foot down or not been a people pleaser or whatever. And they're like, man, I'm just so attracted to Justin's content. And I'm like, yeah, that's because, you know, I don't take shit from people. And you don't want to take shit from people, but you do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, how can I help you explore your shadow, love and integrate your shadow? That's the piece. So the shadow took love away from you as a kid. So if every single time you played the piano or tried to say something, your dad smacked you, well, now being outgoing and charismatic is in your shadow. So you should probably take piano lessons. You should go to a dance class. You should take a public speaking class. You should show up not only... should you express that shadow, you should love the shit out of that shadow and be like, wow, you are amazing. You've been in here this whole time, like willing to get up in front of a crowd and speak in front of people. You've been here this whole time wanting to play the piano. You've been here this whole time wanting to dance and you were just over there in my shadow. The shadow's not bad. The shadow is the parts of yourself that you don't currently love, that you are afraid to express. And this is where we get into self-love, is I want you to love the whole version of you, not just the shiny parts. If I only loved myself when I was on stage singing, I'd be screwed because I don't get on stage and sing anymore.
You'd be so sick. You'd still be there. Like, just as your friend, thinking about where you would be if you clung tightly to the shiny parts of yourself makes me, like, deeply sad. Very deeply sad.
Same. You know, and it's not all doom and gloom. You know, like, I had amazing times. My early 20s, maybe the coolest job ever. I mean, it was fantastic. But that was also because I was unintegrated. I didn't understand what my shadow was. I didn't know, like, I didn't know that I don't like drinking. I don't like drinking alcohol and at all right now. And I drank a lot of alcohol as a kid. Like, I just didn't know. I was numbing. I was, you know, I had no idea how to integrate these parts of myself. I was still a tough guy. I mean, in my mid-20s, I was getting in fistfights at bars. What? You know, I just say, what is this? This is crazy. Like, clearly, I'm not living my best life and super happy and fulfilled. This is madness, you know? But I didn't know it at the time. And sometimes you need a coach like me to sit here and talk to you about ego shadow and to ask you questions and pull these things out of you. All the answers are sitting there within you. You've just never had anybody ask you the right questions to get there.
100%. What's my shadow? How do I do the thing? I know I'm someone that doesn't remember much of my childhood. So trying to root around in, like, what felt good or what was rejected or whatever in my childhood can be very difficult. I think another way to get there is, like, what are you afraid of doing purely because of what other people will think? Mm-hmm. I think that's a good little thread to pull. Yeah. To kind of be like, okay, is there something here? Do I really love music, but I refuse to sing in front of anyone? Mm-hmm. How do I work with that? Have I always really wanted to write, but that feels like it would be stupid? Or I'm picking creative stuff because that's usually a fun place for people to start. So many people don't think that they're creative, and it's really just like, if you're just one of those people that's just like, I'm just not creative, brilliant place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Get some watercolors, get yourself a little keyboard, do something. But figuring out your creativity, I think, is a beautiful place to start to figure out, like, okay, I can't pick out an aspect of my shadow for the life of me. Let's start someplace that I feel squeamy and uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another good point I'll give you here, because of the watercolors that you mentioned, is a good way to know if you're doing shadow work to some degree is if you can remove the quantification of the thing, right? So I wasn't learning to dance so I could be a good dancer. I was learning to dance because I was starting to see that people actually express themselves through that thing. And I just wanted to get good enough to be able to express myself, right? So also another thing I tried, if people are interested in this, is called ecstatic dance. Ecstatic dance is where you go to a group of people and they turn on music and everybody just looks absolutely insane. Some people are writhing around on the ground. Some people are flailing their arms and doing backflips. And other people are like dancing like they're like real dancers because they're good at dancing and that's what they like to do. Ecstatic dance is just like feeling the energy come into you and moving however you want to. If you look up a video of ecstatic dance, most people are going to be like, I guarantee you most people listening to this would look up an ecstatic dance video and be like, no way I'm going to go do that with a bunch of weirdos. And that is because they're afraid. They're afraid of what those people would think. They're afraid to behave that way in public.
Am I the best ecstatic dancer? Am I ecstatic dancing at an 11? Like,
exactly. Yeah. And this is kind of the concept of, like, you know, can you do watercolor painting and then burn the thing when you're done? And can you watercolor every day for the next 6 months and not care if you get better and never show it to anybody, right? First Just Justin podcast I ever did was called Working in the Dark. Can you do these things alone? Can you watercolor for yourself alone in your house and never show it to anybody and never care if anybody sees it? Now, could you watercolor in your house for the next year and be like, wow, I think I might be one of the best in the world at this and still not show anybody? Ooh, now that's scary because you want the social cookies. You want to take a picture and put it on Instagram.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know? This is the work. It's like learning what you actually like to do and just allowing yourself to have experiences for no other reason than for you to have the experience for yourself. Nobody else involved.
And I love that. And I think it's so, if you're someone who's sitting here and being like, I have absolutely no idea what I want to do, you are the luckiest son of a gun listening to this podcast, because that means you can try anything. Mm-hmm. You can try anything. I've heard people say, like, you and I knew we wanted to do music very, very young. And I've heard other people say, man, I wish I knew what I wanted to do so young. It's really no fun, like, figuring it all out. When I decided to stop doing music, I had a full-blown identity crisis.
Yep.
I was Jackie who sang.
Mm-hmm.
I was Jackie the songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, explaining it to my parents was, whoa, that was a conversation that it seared into my mind because they didn't get it. Like, they had been investing in me as much as I had been investing in me in making this work so that I could be happy. And it just, it was so clearly not the thing for me at a certain point. And if you have no idea what direction to go, like, just embrace that as being endless possibilities, because it, I mean, literally, world is your oyster. Try all of the things. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be wildly time consuming. It doesn't have to upend your whole life to get started if that's going to prohibit you from trying, but it totally can. If you want to do that, yeah, go for it. We're all for it. But I think that that's just an important point. If you don't know where to start, just start somewhere. This is something that you cannot fail at. You cannot be bad at. It's going to feel like it probably the entire time. But the reality of the situation is, like, it is all good for you. It's all really good for you. What are some of your favorite things for people to start doing right now? Maybe just shy of getting naked in front of a mirror, because that would have made me hyperventilate 3 years ago, that idea.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Is there anything, or maybe if that's just the best way to go, we can do that. We can let it all out. But whatever, some additional thoughts as to how we can get there.
Part of self-love, this is important. When I was younger, someone like David Goggins would have been very attractive to me. My personal development was masochistic. I mean, I have literally passed out in my sauna from, like, just overwork. I've really hurt myself in a lot of ways, physically, mentally, emotionally, all the things. I've done it with everything. I've done it with fitness. I've done it with biohacking, nutrition. I've done it with psychedelics. I've done it with fasting. I've done it with everything. I've hurt myself in all the ways because I wanted to just grow faster. Now, while I think I did grow very quickly and I got to this place in life, you know, but it was hard as fuck and it hurt a lot and I traumatized myself in a lot of ways.
Yeah. There was a cost.
Yeah, I've had to literally untangle trauma that I did to myself because of so many shoulds. I should do it this way. I should do it that way. I should fast for this long. I should do this. I should deadlift 400 pounds, whatever, you know, whatever it was. It's just stupid. So part of the self-love thing is learning to meet yourself where you are. And we can use the example of mirror love doing that. Like, guys, I do mirror love every single day of my life. Every single day. I stand in the mirror naked and I say, I love you 10 times. And then I say, I am proud of you for, and I say 5 different things. And guess what? None of those things are achievement based. It is like, I'm proud of you for constantly trying to show up as the most authentic version of yourself. I'm proud of you for the exploration you keep doing to get to know yourself better. I'm proud of you for standing in this mirror and practicing self-love. It's not, I'm proud of you that your company did XYZ revenue and you sold these supplements and you did this podcast and blah, blah, blah. It's not that, right? Try to remove the achievement based thing. So I do 5, I'm proud of you for. I do 5 different, I forgive you for, 5 things I'm ready to forgive myself for and let go of. This can be things you did when you were 5 years old. Oof. I forgive you because it just popped in your head. I forgive you for when you were mean to your little sister when you were 5 that one time at camp. That was a real bummer. I wish I didn't do that. I forgive you, you know? And then I commit to you. 5, I commit to you that. So I commit to you that for people with body image issues, mm-hmm, like myself, body dysmorphia my whole life and still to this day,
yeah,
every single day, Jackie. Justin, the guy from the internet, right? I stand in the mirror and I'm like, I commit to you that I will love your body exactly as it is every single day, no matter what. That's one of my commitments. So I'm telling you guys, it sounds cheesy. It sounds challenging. It sounds weird. Like, a lot of people stand in the mirror for the first time and they say, I love you. And they look themselves in the eyes and their face gets red as if a crowd is watching them. And this is where you realize, right? So, like, one, first things first, to finish that thought, meet yourself where you are. If standing in front of a mirror naked makes you hyperventilate, put your clothes on and get in front of the mirror anyway. Start there.
Love it.
Right? And find things about yourself that you love that are not achievement-based. You can literally just say, I'm proud of you for standing here. I'm proud of you right now for being here because this is our next step. And this is coming from a place of self-love. I'm proud of you for being here in front of this mirror right now. Talking to yourself like you're a different person, and it makes people feel crazy.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that also the things that you choose to be proud of yourself, yay or nay to your titles? Because I can very easily see some of the women that I'm working with being, I'm proud of you for being a good mom. I'm proud of you for being a good wife. I'm proud of you for being a good daughter. Yep. I'm proud of you for being a good teacher.
Yep.
And that you're outsourcing your value immediately with those statements. So exactly. Is that something 100%. That is okay to do, or try a little harder to find something else? What do you think?
Well, again, so this has to do with meeting yourself where you are, right? So if you say, I love you because you're such a good mom, day one, that's all right. We'll figure it out. We'll get there. We'll get to a different place. You're still doing the I love you practice, which is really beautiful, right?
Very true.
Some people are not able to find value within themselves without the titles, without the achievements. So let's start with the love first. But keep that in the back of your mind. Hey, can you come up with things that are not title-based, that are not, I'm so proud of you for making $100,000 this year, right? It's like, you could say, I'm so proud of you for finding work that you're passionate about. I'm so proud of you for blah, blah. You know, that's a little tweak rather than how much money did you make or whatever. You can make the tweaks as you go and start to find inherent value within yourself that's not title-based and achievement-based. But again, meeting yourself where you are, what can you come up with today that you want to say to yourself? We don't do things out of fear of judgment from others, but we don't realize what happens. From the time that we're children to the time that we're adults, very few people in the world care what you look like dancing. Very few people in the world give a shit that you talk to yourself in a mirror. Very few people in the world care that you're 30 pounds overweight. In fact, nobody cares but you.
You and I were talking about this last week.
Yeah.
Like, how many people have you gotten naked in front of and they kicked you out? Zero. Yeah. Nada.
Zero. Never happens, right?
No.
So I think about that in myself. And the reason I know that compass, the fear compass, is so legit is because oftentimes you will stumble into the fact that the person whose judgment you're afraid of is your own. And this is a mind fuck to end all mind fucks. And the reason I knew that with myself is because I knew that I kind of wanted to explore dancing. This was in Nashville before I moved to Colorado, before I started dating Megan and stuff. I had heard about this thing called ecstatic dance, and I was like, okay. And I decided to try this. I lived alone in Nashville. I lived alone in my house, right? And I literally decided to put on music. I found like an ecstatic dance playlist, turn on the music, and I'm like standing there, and I'm like, I can't move. Why can't I move? This feels weird. And my face is red, and I'm embarrassed, and I'm like, what the hell? I literally turned off the light and had music playing and was frozen. I couldn't move. And I could feel my face heat up like there was a room of people watching me and laughing at me. I'm alone in my house with the lights off. And that was when I was like, oh, shit, it's all me. Okay. It's all me. It's always been me. I'm judging myself. I make these decisions because I'm not afraid of other people's judgment. I'm afraid of my judgment. Wow, this is ridiculous. And I realized that, like, I was my harshest critic. I was my drill sergeant. It was insane. So that's the thing. When you go stand in a mirror and say, I love you, and your face turns red, who exactly are you embarrassed by right now? 100%. Who are you in front of that you're feeling embarrassed? It's you. It's all you.
And it's so pertinent to you being alone, like by yourself, having these thoughts. I've always, mirror work can be really difficult for me depending on where my body image days kind of are. I think that's pretty normal. Mm-hmm. But you're exactly right. Like, literally, there's no one here.
Yeah.
And we are the worst judges because we not only have all of the things that we have felt, the judgments from our parents in our database, the judgments that we felt from our teachers in our database, the judgments that we've had from our friends. You have the most expansive database of all of the different judgments that could possibly hurt you and make you feel like crap. Like, a stranger could be like, that's weird. And we're devastated, not because the stranger said it, but because we've already got 20 stories swirling in our brain about how, yes, this is weird and this is stupid and I am X, Y, and Z. Out of all of the judges that we could possibly have, especially as adults, you're the worst one.
You're so right. You actually, I mean, that's a great way to put it. Like, you have saved an archive of judgments that you are afraid of. All the judgments you've ever felt in your life or the judgments you've seen other people receive. If you saw some kid dancing and getting made fun of, then all of a sudden you're like, well, I don't want to get made fun of like that kid. I'm not going to dance, even though it didn't happen to you. You just saw it happen. So it's all this endless programming. And this is where you end up in a situation where, like, guys, what we're talking about right now, if you can't get this piece of the puzzle down, it's always going to somehow, some way seem acceptable to you to just eat the Frosty or to just not go for a walk or to just have a significant other that treats you like shit. Or a boss who disrespects you and treats you like shit. Or have a relationship with your kids that you're completely unhappy with, but you don't know how to repair. Over and over and over. How you do something is how you do everything. So you have to understand, until you can get this piece of self-love down, you will be limited in the amount of love that you can receive from others. Which means you're going to call people into your life and attract people into your life that don't have much love to give. And all of a sudden you're like, man, nobody really treats me that well. I really feel just like taken advantage of and feel like I don't really have a support system and I don't really have XYZ. And then you go say, I love you in the mirror and your face gets red and you're like, this is weird. I don't want to do this. Like, okay, well, why do you think you're not getting love out in the rest of the world? What do you think is happening here? Your ability to receive love is literally stunted and you need to work on that and then go out into the world. And this is where a philosophy video that I did that's basically talking about the Clovis philosophy where we drew out a mind map.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, we'll put that link in there. It's basically like everything in your life is connected. So somebody will say, well, you know, I work 16 hours a day on my computer and I'm making enough money to support my wife and my children. Let's say this is a male client. So, you know, I have a good job and I'm working 16 hours a day in front of the computer and all I have time for is like Postmates and Uber Eats and I'm just like ordering food to my house because I work from home and I don't have time to cook and I don't have this and that and like I need to show up for my wife and my kids and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, well, okay, how's your health doing? And they're like, well, I'm 5'6" and I'm, you know, 380 pounds and I'm type 2 diabetic and my doctor is trying to put me on these medications and like that's why I'm reaching out to you, Justin. And I'm like, okay, so now let's connect all the dots. So you're eating nothing but trash junk food, which is really bad for your cognitive function, bad for your energy levels. So by the time you get off that computer 15 hours later, odds are you're probably going and having conversations with your wife that tend to lead to conflict. Is that fair? Oh, wow. Yeah, that's fair. Like I'm having some conflict with my wife. Okay, cool. And then when your kids come to you for help with something and you're tired and you're exhausted because you've worked 15 hours and you've eaten nothing but fast food, you're like, I don't really have the energy to go outside and play with you or whatever you want to do, right? So you're probably not spending good quality time with your kids. Oh, wow. Interesting, Justin. I'm really not spending quality time with my kids. And I'm like, okay, can you start to see how this is all piecing together? And then let's not forget the fact that your children are now getting a message from you that it is okay to let your health completely fall apart and to be annoyed all the time and to spend your life in front of a computer screen as long as you are making a certain amount of money. God, yeah. Is that the message you want to send to your kids, right? And you start to piece all these pieces together and draw strings between them. If you chose healthy foods and less time in front of that screen, maybe you'd make a little bit less money, but maybe you'd have more present time with your wife, and maybe you'd have more present time with your kids, and maybe your health would be better, and you'd send a different message to them. Wow, my dad really chooses happiness, joy, fulfillment, contentment over money. And then down the line, if you want to work with me and learn how to make money online, I can teach you how to do that, yeah. Right? It's like that's the other thing is people have these paradigms stuck up. I have one way of making money, yes. And they place money above all other things. So this is what I mean by like living out of alignment. If you genuinely love yourself, no chance you're going to accept a life that's set up in that way. There's no chance you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Also, loving yourself based on everything that we've talked about and the years that we've spent working and talking on this is like 3 square whole food meals a day is loving yourself.
Totally.
Crash dieting, extended fasting, low calorie diets, whatever next fucking fad that you see is not loving yourself. It's the way that you would treat your child or the way that you would treat your best friend, right? I have a daughter. She is only 3. There's no way that she's not eating 3 square meals a day. And I'm going to pretend that I love her if I don't do that for her, right? Like sometimes bringing it into that kind of perspective can help you see how like you're just not treating yourself. Loving yourself's not a vehicle that will take you from a place where you don't like yourself to a place where you can finally like yourself because you fit back into the jeans that you were wearing 2 months ago. Yeah. It's sometimes loving yourself is doing the thing that can make you very, very nervous, but you know is the loving, healthy thing to do. If you can't meet yourself where you're at, like you've been saying, you will absolutely never get to where you want to go. It is impossible. You will be in a loop again and again and again. And maybe it's not always your weight. Maybe it'll be your romantic relationships. Maybe it'll be your family. Maybe it'll be your financial situation. There's always going to be something that you are just in a loop about because you're waiting to start doing the work of being kind and loving to yourself till you think you deserve it by standards that somebody else told you were the standard.
100%. And this, again, if we go back to how you do something is how you do everything, if we look at what all of diet culture is, eat less food, eat fewer calories, work out more, doesn't matter if you're tired, you have to show up and go to the gym, don't be a baby about it, get the running shoes on, go for it, oh, you're hungry, tough, well, you shouldn't have gotten fat in the first place, now you have to suffer, and blah, 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 no pain, no gain, blah, blah, blah. So what would that look like if you followed the same rules in your romantic life? You can't have what you want. Your needs don't matter. It doesn't matter how you feel. You should let other people tell you exactly what to do no matter how you feel. Damn, is this really what I'm settling for? It's like this constant sacrifice, restriction, suffering. Yes. Constantly. This is hard work. Okay, now all of a sudden, what do you think making money feels like to you? Well, you know, the rich get richer and everything is hard and I don't know how to do this. It's easier for other people. Making money's hard. If I don't work endless hours, how am I supposed to make any more money? There's other people out there just making money they don't even deserve. blah, 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 right? And so I'm like, okay, what does making money look like? What does your romantic relationship look like? What does parenting look like? Oh my God, these kids, they just need something all the time. My sleep schedule's out of whack. They wake me up every morning. They always need something. School is expensive, blah, 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 right? You start to see your entire fucking story is how difficult life is. And you will continue to manifest a difficult life. And I use the word manifest. I don't care if you believe in manifestation or not. This is how things, this is quantum mechanics. It's how it works. If you think everything is difficult, everything will be difficult. If you think making money is hard, it will be hard. If you think parenting is hard, it will be hard. If you think romance is hard and all men or all women are assholes, whichever way you go, whatever, that's going to happen. It's going to be hard. If you think fitness, weight loss is hard, it's going to be hard. Then you find a guy like Justin who I'm like, I'm actually going to feed you twice as much as you're eating. It's going to be all delicious whole foods and you're not going to go to the gym and you're going to get healthy. And they're like, ugh. Sounds like snake oil.
Sorcery.
Yeah, it does, because you insist on everything being difficult. You insist on everything being difficult. You are creating this for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And it's a defense mechanism. You know what I mean? It's totally understandable in some ways. The way that you have kept yourself a certain amount of safe and in a certain amount of misery, that is very predictable for you. If you were always picking people that are attracted to how critical and negative and forlorn you are, then you are going to continue to be in relationships that you can anticipate. And if you, you know, if money is hard, you're only ever going to have as much money as you need to like cover your ass, basically. And then you don't have to worry about what it looks like if you're making more money than mom or dad or your spouse.
Yep.
It's a very safe place to be, but it is an absolutely miserable place to be. And we've said it multiple times on this podcast already. There is no one who is so far gone that they can't turn their shit around, right? People can look at you and be like, Justin travels and has the goddess of a girlfriend and like is so successful and blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm a single mom of four and I am still every day, I'm not killing it, but like I make decisions to try and make things better for myself. Mm-hmm. I make decisions to try and make tomorrow a little bit better. It doesn't have to be picture perfect in order to be progress forward. And it doesn't have to be anybody else's version of glamorous to feel glamorous to you. Mm. Being able to pick up my kids and go to the pool, like after I pick them up from school, is the most glamorous fucking thing I can think of. I was a swim teacher for 6 years, you know, like it doesn't have to look like somebody else's anything to be successful. Mm. It is purely 1000% about how you feel. If you want the raising babies out in the wild, like mazel tov, go get it. I will be cheering you on the entire time. But what looks like bliss to me is just a little bit different than that. And having a friend like Justin is wonderful because in some ways living vicariously through you.
Yeah.
But people who really love you will celebrate whatever your bliss is, whether it makes any sense to them or not. The number of things I tell you in teary voice texts that I know you have no idea what 2/3 of the words that I just used were because they're like, you know, special needs kid stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, Sammy said a sentence. Here, can watch. And you were just as overjoyed as I was. Like that's,
I was pumped about it.
So pumped. It was great. Yeah. And these are the people that you can, we can say attract, or we can just say will absolutely naturally come into your life. If you choose to be true to yourself and choose to be just a little bit brave and try something different, right? We've both moved away from the music industry, obviously, but like I wouldn't know you if we didn't go to Berklee. If I looked at our whole time at music school as a failure because it wasn't the quote unquote right thing, right? People are really concerned about, am I pulling the right thread? Is this my purpose? Is this my passion? Is this whatever? Like, there is no such thing as a mistake. If you're not dead, it's not a mistake. You're going to figure it out, and it's just going to be progress.
Amen. I mean, both of us literally have a $100,000 music education that we don't use. Now, like, granted, in my 20s, yeah, like, I made fantastic money as a musician. It was great. That's where people struggle with the sunk cost thing. It's like, I went to school, I did the thing, and then they find themselves in a situation where they're like, they hate what they're doing, but they won't leave because of the sunk cost thing. Something important that you touched on here is your idea of bliss, right? Everyone's individual idea of bliss. One of the first things you're going to have to do to learn self-love is you got to stop the comparison game. I feel like I'm pretty good at this now in terms of self-love. It's still a challenge. Like sometimes I still have body dysmorphia and things like that, but I'm like, I'm very proud of myself every day. It's still a challenge. It's a challenge for everybody, but the comparison game is critically important because if you're measuring your starting point right now, you're usually measuring your starting point to somebody else's end point.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's really the problem that I was butting up against, was I was finding it really hard for me to have this self-love at a deep, deep level, because there's always people that were at like a different level than I was, and trying to understand that it's not comparable because I don't know that person's whole situation. There's probably places in life where they're maybe quote unquote ahead of me, but there's also places they're behind me. I've grown a little slower in the entrepreneurial sense than some of my friends around me because I focused so deeply on personal development throughout my entrepreneurial journey. I didn't just focus on making as much money as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. So now I have this personal development piece that has now worked its way into my coaching. So like I have this health and wellness brand that I've built, but most of the coaching I'm doing is on this. So I could easily compare and say, I don't have $50 million in the bank like some of my friends do, and I'm so behind and what a loser I am. But then those people with the money in the bank, they want to pay me money to learn the personal development side that they didn't do. So then I'm bartering with them and I'm learning entrepreneurship from them and helping. Like, there is no wrong way to do this. And what ends up happening when you take this approach of self-love first and you end up in the situation I'm in right now, the weirdest part about my coaching, I can tell you this definitively because I know it to be true. I don't know why it becomes this, why loving other people becomes your default. When you have more self-love, it's much easier to love others. And I have literally found myself in a place where most of the clients that I work with, I love them way more than they love themselves. And it's a wild experience. And I can sit there and the way that I celebrate their little victories when they have them, they can feel it on the call. They're like telling me something. And I'm like, yo, wait a second. We're going to pause right now. And we're going to talk about this massive leap. Do you remember two calls ago when you said I could never do this thing and you just did this thing? Like, can we just pause and like virtual high five and celebrate this? And then they're crying because they're like, why does this guy care so much that I'm doing this thing? I'm like, yo, I love you. You know, and it's like, it's this weird situation that you end up having where like your capacity for love expands in every single direction when you begin the process of self-love. It's magic. It's insane.
Which, talk about joy and pleasure, to bring it all the way back around town. Like, that's something that I've been working on right now too, is being able to love without expectation, being able to love without the hope of reciprocation, being able to love just because it's what I want to do. And looking at the world and romantic relationships, friendships, my relationship with my kids, and even my ex-husband, which is one of my most difficult relationships, mm-hmm. through that lens of, this is just about you knowing that you're fantastic. That's mm-hmm. it. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that you'll respond with kindness, but if you don't, that is your right. That's completely fine. Mm-hmm. And it's totally changed the game. And I love this conversation. You and I could talk about this for another 3 freaking hours, but in summation.
Yeah.
Stop comparing yourself to other people. Stop comparing your wants, desires, interests, shadow spots, now that we know what that word actually means, to everybody else's. Understand that there's no way that you can fail. Follow the threads of your curiosities, your interests, your pleasure, and your joy, and be patient with yourself. Sometimes loving yourself can feel really, really hard, but I mean, it seems as though the gifts are tenfold when you apply just a little bit more self-love into your everyday.
It's massive.
And if you can start by doing that mirror exercise, clothed or unclothed, mm-hmm. you can let us know. We're not going to judge you. Whatever you want to do, your birthday suit is lovely. But if you want to put some jeggings on, that's fine too. Get into that mirror work as soon as you can and just see what happens. Mm. Is it something that you should do like once a day, every couple of days, once a week? How do you feel about implementing mirror work as a practice?
If we call it a prescription, I always say once per day minimum. I usually like it in the morning. When you first wake up, your brain's kind of in like more of a pliable place. It's like kind of nice to do it in the morning. And then, as needed. Doesn't matter if you need it 6 times a day. There may be days where you're having a hard day and you do mirror work 5 times, right? And they say maybe some days where you miss because it just happens and don't beat yourself up. But I usually like to say once a day and as needed.
Love it. That's perfect. Yeah. And on that note, I just want to thank you for having this conversation with me today. This has been valuable just to me, but I know that it's going to be valuable to our listeners too. And if you have any final thoughts.
I do. Yeah. One final thought I want to share is I want to help people understand that they are incredibly special. Every single person listening to this. And what I mean by that is if every single person who downloads this episode could get alone with me in a room and I started asking them questions, they would teach me a ton of stuff that I do not know. Every single person listening to this has a tremendous amount to offer. And my favorite example of this, I love to use the path of entrepreneurship. This is a great quote that I love that is, entrepreneurship is the fastest path to personal development. You're just like forced to work on yourself to do the kind of work that I do. And there was this amazing example of this guy who was making $500 a week selling items on eBay, and no matter what he did, he could not figure out how to make more than $500. He was like, damn it, I'm just capped here. Like, I'm really good at making $500 consistently a week on eBay. So he made an online course that specifically taught people, here's how to make $500 a week on eBay, and he sold over $1 million of that course.
I love that.
You're all special, you all have something to offer, and you probably have information in your brain that people would pay for. Because there's someone out there making $0 on eBay that doesn't know how to make $500 on eBay, and if you sell them a $100 course on how to make $500 a week on eBay, they're going to buy that thing because they want it.
Nailed it.
That's it, you know? It's like you said, you don't have to be, you're not competing with Tony Robbins. Like, knock it off. Just like,
yes.
Take your first step.
Yeah, 100%. So thank you again, Justin, so much for your time. I can't wait to record another episode with you next week.
Yeah, I love this conversation. I love your ideas for the episodes. They're killer. I love doing this. Thank you very much.
Thanks, bud. I'll talk to you later. Oh, I gotta go.